Coverage of Palantir and other tech companies at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. We're hiring for a number of positions. Find out more at democracynow.org/jobs. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnock, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamer Riaski, Joe John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood. Special thanks to Safwat Nathal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
It was a normal afternoon. Judy and her friend Liz went out for lunch. The two met in elementary school and have been friends ever since. Liz is an American citizen, and while Judy was brought to the U.S. by her parents when she was only 4 years old, she is undocumented. Liz noticed two men that seemed to be following them, but she thought nothing of it. That's when the men called out Judy's name as if they were old friends. When she turned, the men approached fast. Judy had just been identified by ICE. ICE stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Stories like this happen every day and are happening now more than ever. ICE approaches people in the street, at work, in their car, or even in court. They often will not be in uniform. It's scary. But remember, we have rights. If you are stopped by authorities and don't know who they are, ask them to identify themselves. Then ask, "Am I free to go?" If they say yes, walk away and do not answer any questions. In Judy's case, the agents told her she was not free to go. If this happens, do not resist or run away, and do not say anything, except, "I want to use my right to remain silent. I want to speak to a lawyer." Remember, you can ask to speak to a lawyer even if you don't have one. If the agents search your bag or your person, say, "I do not agree to this search." They are looking for documents proving your immigration status. Witnesses have the right to film the interaction as long as they do not interrupt the arrest and they are transparent that they are filming. Judy was lucky. Even if you do everything right in a similar scenario, ICE may still arrest you.
Oh, I thought there was more to that story. Okay, well, that ended kind of abruptly, but I guess that's kind of how it goes in real life. ICE, yeah, keep your eyes out and let the rest of the people know if you see them. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the Internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock, 6.01 actually, on a Tuesday. Time for another edition of Off the Wall. Oh, yeah. It's another Tuesday evening. Another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah.
Did you hear that PSA before? You know, I was hoping for a conclusion. Well, it was a good PSA about ICE. And by the way, listeners, if you can help us find more PSAs about your rights if masked men come chasing you and all kinds of other horrible nightmares, we really want to be able to air those, but it's hard to find because, you know, there's this myth out there that radio is irrelevant. It's so untrue. It's so untrue because it's the first place everybody goes to in a crisis. You know, we had a rainstorm yesterday. Everybody's turning on the radio wanting to know what's going on because you won't find out from the satellite. You won't find out from the internet. You'll get all kinds of different opinions. But I can tell you with the voice of authority that it is not raining right now in the Long Island area. The Sonnenberg area. It might be raining somewhere else, but you know what? There's only so much I can tell you. I fear we're going to have more such public service announcements as ICE becomes more and more a part of our everyday life. I've yet to see them myself. I'd like to know from listeners if they have encountered them and what that has been like and what they have done. And we all have the power to do something. OTW@2600.com is our email address.
I would like more information about what the plan is. Like, the general public, I think, should be consulted on what exactly this agency will be doing, what the roadmap is. Mm. What do they define success as?
Well, that
I mean, assuming we're bankrolling.
That assumes a couple of things. Number one, that the Trump administration cares at all what you think or what all of us think. And number two, that they are in any way competent enough to be able to tell you what's going to happen. I don't really think any of those are true. I do think, though, and I'm you know, we're starting to see this now with the whole Epstein kerfuffle, that MAGA people have a line, apparently. I didn't know this, that there's a line, and when you run a campaign based on a conspiracy that you are promising to uncover, and then when you get into power, largely because of that, and then you have the ability to actually tell people what was actually going on, and you just sort of say, well, there was nothing. People know you're lying, and even MAGA people will say, no, that's enough. You know, we put you in power, we supported you. Boy, this is, I feel like I'm a MAGA person saying this, but we did all these things, and you're not going to betray us. You know, it's surprisingly easy to fall into it. And, you know, we spent a lot of time and took a lot of time off of our usual activities to put you in the White House, and we expect something back for that. Yeah, and you're not giving it to us. So we're going to ride you out of town on whatever it is you ride people out of town on. And we're going to try something different. This guy Mamdani in New York, he seems to have some good ideas. Let's listen to him for a change. Yeah, MAGA out. Whew, I need a drink.
There might, I think, be a turn towards just being an American first. And that sounds kind of like a political catchphrase or something, but that was also a slogan, I think, in that whole set of time that people devoted to supporting this, and now having it sort of backfires it kind of makes you realize, well, maybe the party has got my does not have my interests in much the same way as other people that are collectively sort of fed up with the way this is unfolding.
Well, if you truly believe in America first, then put America first. And when somebody betrays America, as I think we can all kind of at least consider that Trump is doing right now, we put him second or third or 50th or whatever, but America stays first. And let's define that America. And is that America one where we look at our neighbors as enemies, where we look at people who are trying to make a better life for their kids, for their families, serving us in the process and making our lives so much better? If we are treating them with hatred and hostility and driving them out of the country, is that right? Is that treating America first? I don't think it is. And I think a lot of people get that. A lot of people on both sides of the political spectrum, or I should say all sides of the political spectrum, understand that these are not the enemy. These people who are working hard in kitchens, and farms, cutting our lawns, watching our kids. Now, the list goes on and on. Jobs that people like us, people who are secure in this country, are not going to do. Let's face it. It's not going to happen. I mean, I was just thinking the other day, whatever happened to kids mowing lawns? You know, you never see that anymore. Kids don't want to mow lawns. It's not part of their upbringing anymore. You know, I kind of wish it was. I'm not going to say I had a lot of fun cutting grass, but you know, it built a little bit of character, and it was kind of, you know, made a few extra bucks that way.
You learned how to operate heavy machinery.
All right, I had one accident, and I don't want to get into that. But I learned from that. I never did it again. But yeah, it's a different time. It's a different time, and there are a lot of people that are really out there working their asses off, and to be chased down like common criminals and then sent to prisons in countries that they've never been to, this, you know, that is the crime right there. There should be penalties being paid by people who treat other law-abiding individuals this way. It's disgusting. And I really think most of us get that. You know, it doesn't matter what you believe, you know, as far as abortion or, you know, various wars or other issues. We can be all over the place on that. On this, I think we see this is wrong. And we have the promise now with the funding to ICE going up dramatically in that crazy bill that got signed. We're going to see far worse examples, unless we actually do something to shake them up. And when I say we, I mean all of us, we have to get together on this.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that is in the background of something as like salacious as these files. But if that's all sort of fodder or good reason for people from that those supporter ranks finding common cause, it's really the only way out for either side. If they're upset and want change, they're going to need one another. Mm-hmm. Either way. So I think if it is if that's exactly what it takes, then this is the best path for people to find what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's other aspects of the politics they disagree with, that's where you come together. I mean, you think about actual tragedy, and when people have to rely on one another, well, it's very much the same thing. If you find this a political tragedy, well, you're going to have to find that common cause, come together over different issues above them, and be unified like had been talked about in previous administrations. You know, it's the only way out for us as a country.
You know, I was at that intersection in Port Jefferson Village. Everyone familiar with this? Where 25A meets 112. Nobody understands how to get through this intersection because it's a flashing red light on two of the streets and a flashing yellow light on the other street. So the flashing yellow gets right away, but nobody knows that. And then there are pedestrians, and it just gets really crazy and confusing, and people yell and scream. And I was sitting there. I had the yellow light, I had right of way. And there was this guy in a pickup truck with a flag, who was going straight, and he had a flashing red light. I had right of way, but you know what? I waved him through. I don't know why. I just felt like it. I waved him through, and he gave me a thank you wave. It felt good, you know. That was sort of like a bridge between cultures right there. And I want to do more things like that. There was just this, you know, our politics didn't matter, our backgrounds didn't matter, our beliefs didn't matter. We didn't get into any of that. I waved, he went, waved back. It's as simple as that. It's beautiful. But if we can do that on a grander scale, I think maybe. Well, I'm trying to make a point here, Kyle.
What?
Your eyes are going to roll back into your head.
No, I didn't. I was just sitting here.
Trying to make a point.
I was listening intently. No, you know what? Let me adjust.
All right, it was a Dodge Caravan. It wasn't even a pickup truck. But that's not the point.
But you said pickup.
I did. I wanted to embellish the story just a little bit.
You don't need to do that.
There was a flag, though.
We were all listening.
There was a flag.
Billowing.
I won't say what flag it was. Here's something somebody forwarded to me, which I think is pretty apropos and should be shared, because it's true. If it's not all true, a lot of it is true. If you are using undocumented immigrants' tax records to find and kidnap them, then it was never about them paying taxes. If you are showing up at their place of employment, then it was never about them not working. If you are showing up at courthouses, then it was never about getting them to do it the right way. If you are kidnapping women and children, then it was never about criminals. If you are refusing to give them due process, then it was never about the Constitution. If you are building concentration camps in Florida to keep them here in cages, then it was never about the border. If you're spending billions to do this, then it was never about the economy. And if you're doing all this in the name of a 34-time convicted felon, then it was never about following the law. I don't know who wrote that. I think it's brilliant. And I thank whoever put that together. And encourage people, write more and come up with more points to share, more ways of registering your discontent, your outrage at what's going on out there, because... Oh boy, there is so much. We'll get back to this in a moment. But first, Kyle, you had a great weekend. You went on a massive bike ride, didn't you?
Yeah, I participated in a local event. It was pretty fun.
I was sort of a part of it. I didn't ride the actual ride, but I checked out the ride before to make sure that they were going down safe roads and things like that. And just it was kind of complicated because you have to make all these turns. They had some kind of a GPS thing they send that you overlay onto a device that tells you which way to go down certain streets. Otherwise, you'd never figure it out. And it was cool because I was able to track you to see that you were moving down certain streets at a certain time. And I was able to say, wow, I remember that street. I saw that street yesterday and that, he's on track. I saw when you went off track once and had to make a U-turn. So that was kind of fun. But mostly you went down... not main streets, but a lot of back roads. And I realize Long Island has so many back roads where it's safe to ride without cars speeding past all the time. And you get a good taste of what communities are all about. You go through all kinds of little developments and some really old places as well. So I think you rode around 50 miles altogether?
Yeah, that was as much as I wanted to do. I wanted to have fun and... I wasn't as familiar with the area. I mean, a little bit of it, but I want to learn the terrain a little bit, and it's kind of cool with just how much mapping technology there is to be able to have a lot of insight as you're going. If you've been commuting or cycling in the past, didn't have as much of that stuff, so I'm trying to step it up and learn stuff. And, yeah, the ability to visualize where we would be
was beneficial. But there's a lot of wisdom out there, and you got to talk to people and find out, you know, what the area is like. And, and I don't know, as I had, I don't know, a good time. I didn't really run into anything, but I, having the experience of commuting, used a lot of like hand signals and stuff, and I'm pretty aware of vehicles on more main roads.
You have to be. You absolutely have to. If you're riding a bike out there, you have to know everything around you, and you have to wear a helmet. It's essential. See, so many kids riding around without helmets. There are some that do, and that's great, but, you know, especially if you're riding one of those electric bikes that go fast.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge advocate of helmets. Like, there's no, there's nothing like good or fun about head trauma. And when you're putting yourself out there, you want to give yourself every chance, for the slightest mishap to not like ruin your day and potentially, you know, many aspects of your daily life. So, yeah, I just love learning, more though. I mean, that makes it safer so that you can explore. And I get what you're saying about knowing different roads and stuff. That's why I talking to people who are more experienced and familiar with the local area, like, you can learn so much just, sort of enhancing your sense of like where you want to go and what you like about an area. And I realize that about many places I've been, like, it would just be a lifetime exploring just the subtle differences in streets from here to there, and getting to places you don't ordinarily go to in your own routine.
I got a kick out of just looking at different street names. Yeah, I'm easily amused. But, you know, I grew up in a place called the S section. That's where every street began with the letter S. And that was across the street from the B section where, H section, all kinds of different sections. That was how we named streets out in Stony Brook. But there are all kinds of other ways that people or organizations name neighborhoods. I've seen some developments where every street is a car name, you know, Plymouth Drive and Impala Way, you know, things like that. I've seen presidents. Every street is a president. Oh, my God. That means there's going to be a Trump Street somewhere. Well, fortunately, they stopped building in that area. I saw a couple of weird ones here, too. There was I think there was something called Savings Court. And if you looked at the map, there was like a banking road beyond that. So somebody was really into finances. We saw something. Was it Frank Street? Something like Frank Street. And then two blocks up was Franklin Street. Something like that, something that just seems so ill-advised. But if you just, you know, explore a little bit, you see all these unique naming schemes.
Especially if it's based on names that are so varied, you could come up with so many other names, so many other F names. But yeah,
sure what you mean by that. But yeah, it can
It's a pretty wide open theme if you're going to go with streets.
Well, you know, I've always been of the belief that a street should not be used twice. The same name should not be used twice. What's weird is, you know, I drive around Long Island, and occasionally I see Jamaica Avenue. Now, I grew up in Jamaica, in Queens, and Jamaica Avenue is a big street there. And then, invariably, the street after that is Hillside Avenue, which is the other big street in Jamaica. So somebody came out here and decided they were going to name streets after the streets that apparently they were familiar with. And you see that you see Bleecker Street everywhere. All kinds of New York City street names make it out to Long Island and, you know, other parts of the country as well. But, you know, I think there are so many different names that you could use. I mean, just think of all the words that you know, you know? Like, I'm going to stare at something now. Okay, I'm looking at a clock. Okay, is there a clock drive somewhere? I don't know of one. Yeah, that's a good name right there.
There's definitely a clock drive.
Okay, Speaker Street. I'm looking at speakers hanging from the ceiling there. Speaker
you can't just
Street.
Point things out of a studio.
I'm looking at LCD light. Well, okay, that's not going to work very well.
LCD? You mean... Oh, yeah, LED.
Well, that too. You see, you have a whole development of light bulbs.
Actually, there are a lot of screens, so...
Carpetway,
crystals.
Doorknob. I mean, look, these are all words, and when you say that, when you say, hello, 911, I'm having an emergency, I'm at, you know, doorknob way, they're going to know there's only one of those, and they'll find you quicker. Whereas if you say Maple Street, my God, they'll be looking for you all day. What's the point? Let's use our words. They always tell us to use our words. Let's do that. There are so many of them. All right, rant over.
So everyone learn a new street name.
So, okay, back to fun with ICE. First of all, you know, I think information is key. Information is power. And the more we know, the better. And the more we know, the more they hate it. So knowing things like where they operate from, what vehicles they use, and, okay, this is a question I've been asking a lot of people. You see these guys walking around completely covered. They have no ID. Their faces are covered with masks, and we're not supposed to question them. Their vehicles have no identifying marks, no license plates. I mean, explain to me, under what law are you required to treat them as anything less than a threat? Because it sure sounds like bandits to me, you know. That's what literal bandits on the highway would dress with masks and hide their identity. Look, if you guys are serious about this whole ICE thing, then be proud of it. You know, say, I work for ICE. I am working to make my country better. This is, you know, this is my face, like every other person has to show their face. Okay? You don't have to show your face, but you know what I mean. You know, it's something that, when you are in a relationship in any way, you're generally recognized based on who you are, based on the words you say, rather than showing up without any actual authority, without any identifying marks, just intimidation. It's wrong. It's just completely wrong. So is it right to reveal who these people are? I think it is. I think it is because we honestly don't know who they are or what they are. We just have to assume. And what is the actual point of hiding who you are in this particular case? Are you really, you're that afraid of the people that you're sworn to protect? I don't think you're really protecting people then, if that's the case. It sounds to me like you're worried about retribution for the bad things that you do. And that's something to look at. Look, the border has been an issue. It's been discussed many times. I wonder how much of this would have been avoided had the deal. Do you remember the deal last year that was agreed to with immigration that apparently solved a few problems at least and was killed by Trump before he was even elected because he wanted something to run on. And if the problem was solved, he couldn't run on it. So that's why that never happened. If it had happened, would we be going through any of this? Well, who's to say? But it never was even given the chance. And this was the preferred outcome. I don't think, like I said before, I don't think people want this. I don't think this is something that is what a democratic society looks like. And I think it's something that we have to figure out every way of fighting back and not allowing.
Even if that means having fun with ICE.
Well, yeah, you can always have fun. And again, when people are trying to be intimidating and trying to hide who they are, oh, there's so much fun you can have with that. There really is. Okay, so let's take a little journey into Nassau County, our neighbors to the west, which, thanks to Bruce Blakeman, has become a fascist state. I don't say that lightly, but this guy is the face of fascism, and it's disgusting. And I don't know why they've elected him, what, two times now, as county representative, county executive, that is. Apparently ICE has held more than 1,400 people at an East Meadow jail so far this year under a partnership with Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman. That's according to an investigation by Newsday. Yes, Newsday still does investigations. it's a good thing, too, that they're out there. These previously unreported figures show that since Trump took office, ICE has transported hundreds of people each month to East Meadow. Blakeman announced Nassau's partnership with ICE in February, moving quickly to advance Trump's mass deportation agenda by enabling Nassau's police and sheriff's departments to arrest and jail immigrants with no legal status. And as part of that agreement, Blakeman set aside 50 jail cells for ICE to use. It should be pointed out that Suffolk County, where we are now, has no such agreement with ICE. And that's a good thing. The residents, here's Blakeman lying again, the residents of Nassau County overwhelmingly approve of removing criminals from our neighborhoods and communities. Okay, that statement is probably true. Most people do approve of removing criminals, but that's not what we're doing here. No, these are people without any criminal charges against them, and they're being thrown into jail and hunted down. So Blakeman is pleased with his relationship with ICE. I don't know how other people in Nassau feel about that, but it's pretty disgusting. And he went further. Blakeman has, as of Friday, signed an executive order authorizing federal, state, and local law enforcement to wear masks during investigations, such as immigration enforcement and drug and gang investigations. Just the hypocrisy here is unbelievable, because this is the same guy that tried to criminalize wearing masks in Nassau County, but not for cops, just for the rest of us. Yeah, if you wear a mask, you must be up to something. But if you're a cop, do whatever you want. It's disgusting. I'm out of words. What I find very troubling, Blakeman said, is the very same people that criticize our mask law are the same people that are saying law enforcement officers in the performance of their duty can't wear a mask to protect their identity if they're involved in a sensitive investigation. Yeah, the hypocrisy is yours, Bruce. You're the one saying that wearing masks is bad except when it's your guys doing it. Cops don't wear masks, and they are involved in sensitive investigations all the time. And if you don't have the stomach for the job, don't do the job. But that's a part of it. Walking around in masks, being intimidating, not identifying yourself, grabbing innocent people off the streets, creating just an atmosphere of panic everywhere. That's not what anybody wants. Well, it's what you want, not what anybody else wants. So, yeah, you know, when someone makes an extra effort to hide who they are, I just feel it's right to make an extra effort to figure out who they are, you know? So, who they really are. It's just a little victory for democracy. Now, I think we mentioned, we actually might have mentioned this on the other show, that ICE appeared in the Brentwood Fire Department parking lot. They were staging there. Yeah, and Brentwood is a largely Hispanic area. In fact, many of the volunteer firemen are Hispanic, I dare say. Some of them may be undocumented. Imagine that. Wanting to help the community you live in. How dare they? Well, Assemblyman Phil Ramos is involved in this. And the East Brentwood Fire Department has responded to his interest by revoking the title of honorary chief from Assemblyman Phil Ramos days after he accused personnel of another local department of working while U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents used their parking lot to carry out enforcement operations. In a letter, yeah, it's kind of bizarre, I know, in a letter addressed to Ramos and published on social media Thursday, East Brentwood Fire Chief Bryant Figueroa and First Assistant Chief Frankie Vasquez said Ramos's recent public actions and statement have placed an unfair and dangerous spotlight on our volunteer brothers and sisters. His words have unjustly attacked the men and women who risk their lives to protect our neighbors every day. It's kind of a bizarre interpretation. We don't take this decision lightly, but we can't allow politics or false narratives to endanger or divide our department. In a statement issued on Friday, Ramos, who is a Democrat, by the way, from Brentwood, said he has no issue with losing the symbolic title bestowed upon him in recognition of years spent securing investments in equipment and technology for the East Brentwood Fire Department. In a fire department already struggling to recruit volunteers, it boggles the mind that they would choose to make their firehouses places of fear rather than places that welcome and protect immigrant families, Ramos's statement said. The East Brentwood Fire Department's announcement came about 1 week after Ramos's office was informed of ICE agents using the parking lot of the Brentwood Fire Department's Broadway firehouse. His office later confirmed that this occurred while that firehouse remained open and staffed by department personnel. Now, Ramos is the deputy speaker of the state assembly. He called the Brentwood Fire Department to launch a public investigation into the incident at a news conference on July 6th. While our neighbors go to work, while our kids go to school, while our families try and live in peace, ICE is launching raids from our very own firehouse in a town that is over 70% Latino, in a fire department that is largely made up of Latino firefighters. Figueroa, on the other hand, told Newsday that both local and federal law enforcement often utilize fire department parking lots while firefighters are on duty. Local fire departments do not work for or with ICE, he added, and have no control over which law enforcement agencies use their property or for how long. Really? You have no control over your parking lots? This is interesting. Teenagers, listen. Apparently, fire departments have no control over their parking lots. You can do whatever you want there. Yeah. Federal authorities can just have carte blanche to do all kinds of operations, and fire department can't do anything about it, even though it's on their property, even though it's where their vehicles go. No, they have no power. No power at all. Imagine that. That fun you could have in these parking lots. Skateboarding, launching fireworks. Oh, I don't know. All kinds of things.
Pop a wheelie.
Yeah, you could even do that. Give me a break. No control. Yeah, here's... Get ready for a stunning comparison here. It would be the same way if U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement used the Long Island Railroad parking lot. So now the Long Island Railroad is working with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement? Okay. Yeah, this guy Figueroa, maybe don't have him go out on a press tour. Yeah, you can't just pick any parking lot and say, oh yeah, you guys can stage there. It doesn't happen in Long Island Railroad parking lots because those parking lots are for the Long Island Railroad, and everybody knows that. And it would cause real problems if they did. Just like it should be causing real problems if they're using the fire department parking lot for this. I.e., next to the fire department building, where many Hispanic people go to work for free. I mean, the fact that they don't see a problem here is stunning. And, okay, yeah, so the symbolic title has been removed from a congressman. Who cares? That's where we are. That's what we're talking about here. Okay, what else? We are running out of time, but there are other stories I wanted to get to. There's a student from Suffolk County Community College who was arrested by immigration agents as part of an escalating nationwide crackdown. Crackdown on what exactly? I don't know. She's not a threat. She is a student, a daughter, a community member. She belongs here. That's according to a whole lot of people, the heads of the Long Island Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, an umbrella group of unions that represents about 300,000 workers. They say Sarah Lopez Garcia should be released from an immigration jail in Louisiana and return to Long Island to continue her studies. What we know is that Sarah Lopez Garcia is a promise. She is a promise of what this country can be when we lift up hardworking students who contribute to our communities and try to make a better life for themselves, in this case, through higher education. That's according to John Durso and Ryan Stanton, president and executive director of the aforementioned group. When a young woman with protected status is detained, it's not just Sarah who is targeted. It's every worker, every student, every immigrant who calls this country home. The unjust detention of a young woman with legally protected status is a moral failure and a direct attack on the values we claim to uphold as a nation. She and her mother were arrested May 21st when ICE came to their house in Mastic. And this kind of thing is just happening all over the place. There's an Irish tourist who was jailed by ICE for months after overstaying their U.S. Visa by 3 days. Yeah, that's what's going on here. 35-year-old tech worker, father of three from Ireland, came to West Virginia to visit his girlfriend last fall. One of many trips he'd taken to the U.S., he was authorized to travel under a visa waiver program that allows tourists to stay in the country for 90 days. He planned to return to Ireland in December, but was briefly unable to fly due to a health issue. His medical records show this. He was only 3 days overdue to leave the U.S. when an encounter with police landed him in ICE custody. And from there, what should have been a minor incident became a nightmarish ordeal. He was detained by ICE in three different facilities, ultimately spending roughly 100 days behind bars, with very little understanding of why he was being held or when he'd get out. Truly disgusting. Truly awful. But it's not the only disgusting, awful thing happening in the world, unfortunately. Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank beat a U.S. citizen to death? Hey, you haven't heard about that on the news, have you? Probably heard about Elmo being anti-Semitic, but you didn't hear about a U.S. citizen being murdered by Israeli settlers.
That's just the people that like want to build and live wherever they want.
Yeah, these are people who are living illegally by every
they're like bulldozer people.
That's the government that bulldozes Palestinian homes. But
so
the settlers
it
basically
wasn't the IDF. It was just
well, the IDF
citizens.
The IDF helps. There's no question about that.
Yeah, because they like basically.
If you want to learn about this,
guard the people that are
try and watch
harassing
some,
other people.
Try and watch some films, like the one that won the Academy Award earlier this year, that basically tell you what's going on in these places. It's a nightmare. It's crazy. And the
so
fact
how'd it play out?
Well, they killed the guy. That's how it played out. It's over for him. They've killed 1,200 people in the West Bank. The West Bank is not the Gaza Strip. It's a very different place. No attacks had been launched from there on October 7th that I'm aware of. But since October 7th, I have this wrong. 1,200 people were killed in Israel. Okay. Do I have a number? You know what? I'm going to find out what the number is. How many people were killed in the West Bank? A lot of numbers being thrown around here. But the thing is, you know, killing a U.S. citizen is usually a big deal. And in this particular case, we're not seeing much attention paid to it. The Israeli military said a confrontation had broken out between Palestinians and Israelis, and officials were investigating reports of a Palestinian civilian killed, something they never do, usually. But in this particular case, there's a U.S. link to it, so, you know, I guess they care a little bit.
I didn't hear about this anywhere.
No, you didn't hear about it anywhere. The U.S. State Department of Justice has faced criticisms from its own attorneys for the glaring gap between how the agency investigates crimes committed by Russia and Hamas as opposed to accusations of crimes committed by Israel and its citizens. It's really, it's a terrible situation over there. And it just, every week there's something new to report. You know, I have to express my profound disappointment with the UK and the way they haven't been dealing with certain things. We talked last week about the concert where somebody was chanting death to IDF, which, you know, I don't think it's a concert is a good place to chant death to anybody. But to say that's a strong example of anti-Semitism and it's something that is there's no excuse for. You know, you have to be kind of blind to not see why people would reach that particular point where they would chant something like that. When you have over 50,000 civilians killed in the Gaza Strip by the IDF, that might result in people not wishing well upon them. And apparently, you know, it's okay to support the military action that kills all these civilians. That's okay. You can say that. We have said that. Our media says that. Our government officials say that. God knows Israel says that every single day. And it's perfectly okay to say, I support that. You can cushion it by saying, I support Israel's right to defend itself. Somehow making that defense, you know, killing innocent people. We're talking literally people who are lined up trying to get food or water. Every day, more people are killed just standing there trying to survive. And it's okay to support their murders. But if you criticize IDF, if you say bad things about IDF, how, you know, Palestinians have the right to defend themselves and those people really, you know, deserve the worst that can happen to them, all of a sudden you become an anti-Semitic monster when you are basically responding to a great injustice that is being perpetrated every single day. So, yeah, I can understand why somebody at a concert would be impassioned enough to... I'm not saying it's an appropriate thing at a concert, you know. It doesn't seem right, and it doesn't seem effective, right.
No, festive.
It's definitely not festive. And, something about crowds chanting death to anybody that kind of disturbed me.
Yeah, because you can get into, like, mob mentality. And
you really can. And
have really unexpected results with a large group.
But to delete the concert from all of your streaming platforms, to basically condemn everybody who was there, to ban the artist who was a part of that, not have any dialogue whatsoever. No, that's cowardly. And the BBC is leading the pack in cowardice. And they're doing it again. Two more instances today. I was watching BBC World News, and you know how at the bottom they have the headlines, usually about, I don't know, 6 to 8 different headlines, and it just kind of scrolls. Well, today it was breaking news. President Trump speaks to BBC. President Trump says he's disappointed in Vladimir Putin. Breaking news. President Trump speaks to BBC. President Trump says he's disappointed with Vladimir Putin. It, over and over again. Just that. Who cares? You know, whatever he says, it doesn't mean anything. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He didn't even know Liberia existed before last week. This guy is an ignoramus. Okay, fine, you talk to him. Great, so play the interview. Well, they were playing the interview, but they were also running that, and they wouldn't stop. They wouldn't talk about anything else. Now, England, I understand, also is having a state visit, another state visit. I mean, didn't they already try this once where... I don't know. He did something like he pushed the queen or he stood in front of her. I don't know what he did, but it was...
He stepped out of protocol.
He definitely did. And normally I would applaud things like that. But in his case, it's just because he's a buffoon. But having him back, I mean, we saw the French president go there last week, I believe. And you know, that seemed to mean something. It seemed to be like actual leaders conversing and you know, getting away from the nonsense. But no, apparently they're embracing this as well and saying, yeah, you know what, we're going to listen to everything you say and take you seriously.
No, I don't know. I think that this trip, though it may seem like a lot of celebration of Trump, I think it would be a much more stern visit, that the UK wants to impress certain things, certain messages from Europe you can count on NATO and war efforts, but also economic issues. I think they want to like exert pressure more than anything.
I'd like to believe that, but wrapped
in this like nice celebration.
Yeah, what tells you that though? You know, when do they actually say, you know, Trump, shut up, listen to the grown-ups.
You're right though. Like a state visit, is that really deserved?
No, it's not.
Even if you want to exert pressure. Yeah, okay, I take that back.
When you have somebody who is causing so much harm, you don't reward him. You punish him. You hurt him.
But they
you
have
do things.
Ear.
And, you know, who cares if he gets angry? So he gets angry. He throws a temper tantrum. His blood pressure goes up.
That's why I think they would use an opportunity to lure him and have his ear to exert that, like, under their terms. Well, I don't know. I don't know, understand any of it.
Here's the latest. Look, it's cowardice. We're seeing cowardice all around us. All right, we're seeing it here in this country. We're seeing it all around the world.
BBC could ask some tough questions.
I thought BBC would do better, but yeah. Okay, here's something
else. You're right.
And especially with Israel, they are in a panic if they're ever seen as being critical of Israel. And I'm really getting fed up with this. Britain's media regulator said yesterday it will investigate a BBC documentary about children's lives in Gaza. Are you ready for the reason? After a review concluded that the narrator's father has Hamas links, and the program therefore breached editorial guidelines on accuracy. Okay, I don't get how those two things are at all related. I mean, you know, there are a lot of Hamas people in Gaza. There are so many. So it's hard not to be related to one, I imagine. But in this particular case, okay, first of all, the program was called Gaza. How to Survive a War Zone. They've removed it from their streaming service after it emerged that the 13-year-old narrator, Abdullah, he's 13 years old, he is the son of Ayman al-Yazari, who was the mastermind behind the attack on Israel. No, he's the deputy minister of agriculture. Okay, so he's the deputy minister of agriculture for a country that you are trying to... or it's not even a country. What is it? I don't know... What to call Gaza, because it sure isn't being treated like a country. Nobody's protecting it. But yeah, Hamas is deputy minister of agriculture. So you have the 13-year-old son being the narrator for a documentary. Okay, why is that a big deal? I mean, if you had you know, one of the Trump kids narrating something, yeah, we'd make fun of it, but... they wouldn't pull it because, well, it can't be accurate now. No, there's going to be some bias, obviously, in any documentary. Ofcom, the media regulator, said that it was launching an investigation under rules that state factual programs must not materially mislead the audience. And again, I'm not seeing where the misleading takes place here. Yeah, this guy is related to somebody. Somebody who is playing a part in the government of this region. It's not unfathomable for that to happen. How does that affect the story? How does that affect, you know, how is this not solved by simply saying this kid is the son of the Deputy Minister of Agriculture? So, you know, consider that when you watch what happens. So, the independent production company that made the program didn't share the background information regarding the narrator's father with the BBC. It said the production company, Hoyo Films, bears most responsibility for the failure, though it didn't intentionally mislead the BBC. The review, conducted by the corporation's director of editorial complaints, found no other breaches of editorial guidelines, including impartiality. There was no evidence of outside interest impacting on the program. Yet they pulled it. Yet you can't see this. You know... You could just replace the narrator with somebody else. I don't know why that makes a difference. The words aren't going to change. So this 13-year-old kid, he can't say anything about Gaza to anybody because his father is the deputy minister of agriculture and he lives in Gaza. It's ridiculous. This is absurd. You basically add a note if you think it's relevant and you let people decide for themselves. So I want to see this documentary. How hard do I have to work to see Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone? Let's make that an exercise for the listener. Let's try to find that. But this kind of thing, this kind of cowardice, instead of focusing on all the people that are being murdered by Israel every single day, you know, not criticizing that nearly enough, not focusing on that. That's a true scandal here, not the fact that a 13-year-old happens to be the son of some bureaucrat in Hamas. I'm surprised they have a minister of agriculture. This must be challenging.
Just report the facts.
All right, well, you know, we're almost out of time. I could start another story, but I don't think we have time. So I'm going to open it up to us for the next 90 seconds. Our email address, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from our listeners. We do hear from our listeners quite a bit, actually.
All the time. Yeah, otw@2600.com. And there's plenty of archived shows there. Also, continue to listen to WUSB.FM on the internet and 90.1 FM, as well as 107.3 FM.
Yeah, 107.3 FM is for those of you on campus. 90.1 FM is for those of you all around the world. Well, actually, all around Suffolk County, I guess. So welcome if you're listening to us on 90.1. And, of course, if you find yourself in an area where the signal is not that strong, as Kyle said, WUSB.FM.
There's plenty of schedule information and upcoming specials and other programming changes and announcements constantly updated.
And we have such a good programming schedule, such variety. Oftentimes I find myself listening and just not being able to stop because it's, you know, either really good music, really good discussion, really incredible programming. It's inspirational.
Let's go, America.
Yeah, let's inspire America. We're going to continue these conversations, of course. We're going to continue looking into things. If you find out anything, if you want to share stuff with us, if you want to argue with us too, please, you're welcome to. otw@2600.com. That is our email address.
Yield to cyclists.
Yes, yield to cyclists whenever possible. We will see you next week. Good night.
Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates at the long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. To the beach of Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.